We've got the minister responsible on the line, David Littleproud. A very good morning to you.
Good morning, Hamish. Good to be with you.
Obviously, this National Farmers Federation drought policy has been a sticking point. You've said that you are waiting on that. Now that you have this, what's that going to lead to? Will there be a new overarching drought policy put in place by your government?
We already have one. What we will be
I know you
doing,
said that, but it's a question about what you're going to do next.
Yeah, and well, I'll finish what I was about to say, Hamish, is we already have one, but what we want to do is be constructive with peak bodies like NFF and sit at the table and be constructive about what can be added to it. We continue to consult and get out and listen to real farmers, and we've been actually criticised by many for doing it, but we don't apologise for that. Our response has been one of being responsive to the situation as it evolves. Tackling drought is like going up a set of stairs. As it escalates, you take another step up. And that's what this government's done. And we've all got responsibilities. And in fact, the state governments and the federal government, after the drought summit, all unanimously agreed in a bipartisan way that state governments need to look after animal welfare, freight and fodder. They need to look after that. Sure. And we need to look after farmer welfare. So that's where we've then created three pillars in which we are acting in here and now, which is what Fiona was saying quite articulately, is about keeping farms in business through farm household allowances, concessional loans that are saving tens of thousands of dollars in interest, but also community. You've got to understand there's bricks and mortar shops in these little country towns that are hurting. So we're doing stimulus packages into those shires to use local tradies, use local hardware stores, and then the future. The future fund.
Can I just ask you to address something that Fiona Simpson said repeatedly? And I take note of the fact that you're saying there is already this overarching drought strategy. It was formulated in 1992. I think we're all familiar with that now. We've talked about it with you on this program before. But she is saying that the response tends to be ad hoc, that it does not deliver in a way that is effective for these communities affected by the drought. Do you accept the criticism?
I would say our response is responsive to the situation at hand, and that is the challenge with drought.
But that, sorry, with respect, Minister, that doesn't really answer the question. Do you accept her criticism or not?
No, I don't, because I'm saying you need to look at this natural disaster, drought, differently to other natural disasters like fire or flood that destroy a house or a road, and you can measure that in how you repair that, whereas drought is something that creeps across the landscape. It depletes the landscape and depletes bank balances over a set of time, and it's not equal. So in Queensland, the drought's different to New South Wales as it is to Victoria, not only because of the severity, but also because of the industries that it touches. So we have to make sure that we're responsive. And that's why, to outsiders, it might look ad hoc, but it's actually targeted. And that's why we get out on the ground, whether it be in Victoria or in South Australia or in Queensland, and listen to what people are having to say. Because the messages we get in each state is often different, but the state's responsibilities are quite clear in that. They have to look after that animal welfare, that freight and fodder. We've got to make sure that farmer welfare is looked after, as well as the community.
Given the commitment that you've just described to working with the industry and the people affected, why hasn't the National Farmers Federation, for example, been able to see this report from Major Stephen Day, the government's drought coordinator?
Well, obviously, it was part of the cabinet deliberations on how we're going to continue to respond to the drought. And I obviously wanted to make sure that as the peak body, representative body of agriculture in this country, we also took into account their response. And we'll be sitting down as early as today, in fact, this morning, Fiona and Tony Maher, the CEO, who I've got to thank them for their leadership on this as well. But we'll be sitting down and working through this. And the report will be all those reports, and we intend to release those as well. The Prime Minister's made it clear he'll be putting that through, but we wanted to
So when will that be made public?
That'll be made public in the coming weeks. Effectively, we wanted to make sure that if we needed to add to it after constructive consultation with NFF, after they'd got to a position, if we can add to it, we've been listening and we're continuing to listen, not only to NFF, to local governments and to farmers at the grassroots. And that's what we'll continue to do, because that's how we'll get the best response. And we ask the states to come with us on that.
So you're saying that you're listening to them. You would have heard Fiona Simpson say at the end there that the NFF believes there is more action needed in this space when it comes to action on climate change. Are you listening to that?
Yeah, and in fact, we've acted. So part of the Future Drought Fund, Hamish, the $5 billion Future Fund that'll give a $100 million dividend in the Goulding year, is around research into climate adaptation to continue to equip our farmers with the tools they need to be able to continue to grow the best food and fibre in the world. So are we talking about,
in the longer term, government paying for farming communities to transition their agricultural model to more sustainable practices? Is that actually what we're talking about?
Well, part of that, and we're actually already doing that. In fact, one of the things that I brought in as agriculture minister was a stewardship program where we were rewarding farmers, not just for their carbon abatement, but for the improvement of their biodiversity, improving shelter belts, repairing creekways. They should be rewarded financially for that, not only by government, but also by the marketplace, because the provenance of our food and fibre is so important. That's a very key part of this, but also, in terms of our research and development.
So
giving
the
best genetics, the best types of seeds available that are resistant and to the changing climate. That's using the smarts. In fact, farmers themselves have been using big investments in that. Between governments and farmers, we invest over $1.1 billion a year in research and development to give our farmers the cutting-edge tools to be able to adapt.
But are you saying that longer term, there are chunks of Australia that are going to need to be farmed quite differently to the way they are today? Because, if you go and talk to farming communities, that's what they're sort of talking about at the moment. We may no longer be able to do this particular type of farming in the future. And I suppose the broader question then is, are we as taxpayers going to pay for that transition?
No, I think what you're seeing is the market and farmers are transitioning themselves. These are businesses. These people aren't charities. These are professional, scientifically run, technologically run enterprises.
But many of them are going bust at the moment. How can they afford to do that?
I think that's a generalisation. With all due respect, we meet regularly with the banks, and they are telling us while they are continuing to work, they are not seeing an increase in their impaired assets. They are obviously watching and acting. We continue to work with the banks. So I think we've been careful not to talk ourselves down, because we want the next generation to think that agriculture is a good part to be in. So while I get metropolitan commentators frothing at the mouth at the moment, we can do ourselves and regional Australia a lot of harm if we talk ourselves down. It will rain, Hamish, and when it does...
To be perfectly fair, having spent a fair amount of time in drought-affected regions recently, that's what you hear when you go there. I don't think it's just metropolitan commentators saying this sort of stuff. People on farms are quite desperate at the moment. Are you sort of diminishing their plight by suggesting that?
Totally not, Hamish. And you know what? I don't have the comfort of tucking myself into a bed in Metropolitan. I actually live and breathe it every day, my friend. I actually see these people and I know them by face and by name. These are resilient, proud people, and they believe in what they do, and they know what they are doing is the best in the world. Now, we're going through a tough time, and we continue to have these conditions over our whole agricultural history. But we've faced up to them and we continue to work through them. So we will get through this. And when people say they want hope, well, it's about leadership of hope and saying we will get through this. Your government will stand shoulder to shoulder with you and we will get you through in the here and now. And that's why our strategy is in three pillars, the here and now, the community and the future. That's why we're going to prepare them to get through this one and prepare them for the next one.
The opposition's shadow agriculture minister, Joel Fitzgibbon, has been speaking overnight on 7:30. I just want to play an excerpt of what he had to say.
Some hard decisions do need to be made, and that's why I think a war cabinet style approach would be helpful, so that if some of those tough decisions are particularly tough for some people, then the major political parties would be making them together, and therefore the government would be protected from any political backlash. So I think that's critically important. It's the same concept Menzies used, Churchill used during the war, and I think we are approaching an almost wartime situation here.
Are you open to that?
No, Hamish, we had this thing called the Drought Summit where Mr. Fitzgibbon himself was sitting at Old Parliament House with industry, with farmers themselves, community leaders, where we worked through and where straight after that, the Prime Minister took the leadership with the states and we all agreed our responsibilities. The states look after animal welfare, we look after farmer welfare, and we got unanimous agreement. And now it's about making sure it's delivery. We continue to work through that. And that's why we continue to escalate our response as the drought escalates. We take that next step up the stairs, and that's why we continue to do that, and we continue to go out and listen, and we'll continue to respond. We're happy. We don't need to have a war cabinet. Mr Fitzgibbon knows my phone number and can walk through my door any time, as can Mr Albanese. And in fact, I have to say, I have to congratulate Mr Albanese, because it took his leadership for the Labor Party to finally support the Future Drought Fund. They voted against it in October, and it wasn't until there was a change of leadership in the Labor Party that they voted for that. A centrepiece around what Fiona was actually talking about, a future policy.
David Littleproud, we appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Great to be with you, mate.